get to the lecturing part, though. Two announcements. Announcement number one is that anyone who is staying local over Pesach, starting next Tuesday, the dining room will not be serving food, but we'll still be having food. It'll be on the balcony for breakfast. Lunch and dinner will be arranged with the Madrichim as well. So that's more of the physical Gashmi announcement. Just be aware of that if you're staying here again. The lunch pattern, the food pattern will change. It will not be in the main dining room. It'll be either on the balcony or start cleaning everything up. Madrichim will assist you also for non-breakfast regarding the food, how to get the food. That's the Gashmi announcement. The Ruchani announcement is the Rosh Shiva is giving shir tonight in Rav Fuchs's normal slot, but I want to explain to you what Rosh Shiva is doing in order to get here and give that shmooze. He has a wedding. He's been sick for the last period of time. He's Baruch Hashem. He's fighting through and joining us the last week of yeshiva. He has a wedding. He's officiating tonight. He's leaving the wedding to come back and give the shmooze to all of us. So that itself is is something that you should understand. The level of Mesiras Nefesh that goes involved in Rosh Shiva giving the shmooze, it's not something that's an optional shmooze. You should make it your business to really be here for it and to be able to soak up the unbelievable pearls of wisdom that Rosh Shiva will be sharing with us tonight. Mostly very personal experience that Rosh Shiva has had with his Rebbeim as he was becoming the Rosh Shiva that he is today. He'll be able to share with you some of those inspirational experiences that he's had. It's really kedai to go, and even if he wouldn't be coming back just for this, it would be kedai. And certainly the fact that he's coming back, it's really important to all of us show the proper kavod Rosh Shiva. Let's start with a quick story, if I can. You guys want to share over here if you want. Yeah, right next to me. About 10 years ago, probably closer to 8 years ago, the yeshiva took a trip to a biblical zoo. And while we were there, my kids at the time were 5 years old, 6 years old, in that vicinity. I decided to take them out of school and have them come with me to the trip to the zoo. And we were there together, we were walking around, we were being led by a very good tour guide, telling us about the biblical sources for all the different animals that were found there. As we're heading from, like, you know, the giraffes to the elephants, and, like, we're seeing these unbelievable animals like kids never seen before, I get this, like, this tug on my sleeve. And I look down, and it's my kid. He's, like, got this look of awe, like, his jaw is dropped. And he's, like, pointing up. I'm expecting to see, like, you know, some dinosaur that just is flying ahead or is right next to the giraffes. But what could possibly have grabbed his attention in such a fashion? And I look, and I'm like, what? What is it, Yedidja? He's like, I look up and it's a pigeon. He's like, a bird. I'm like, a bird? I said, we see that every day in our backyard. He's like, couldn't stop pointing at it. So I was like, you missed the whole trip. Like, I could have kept him home because like looked at the worms in the backyard and a bird. And I got to realize that sometimes we go through an experience and we completely miss the trip. We miss the moments. We miss what we're supposed to get out of it. And there's so much there to be had that we sometimes just let slip right through our fingers. The Chag coming up upon us right now, the Chag of Pesach, is an opportunity to speak about. I want to share with you the unbelievably unique opportunity that exists in this day, and particularly how we're supposed to learn, what lessons from the day should we take into our lives that we can hopefully take with us, not only ourselves for that day, but consistently from this point forward in our lives as well. But the question is, how do you find the lessons of a day? How do you find the meaning behind a day? I'll give you an example of how deep Pesach goes. If you look in the beginning, in the middle of Sefer Bereishis, we find that Lot was serving the Malachim who came to visit him. He was serving them matzahs. And says Rashi, Pesach Haya. Now, that's fascinating that Lot kept, you know, ate matzahs and Pesach, but the whole story with leaving Mitzrayim and the bread not having risen yet didn't happen for many generations until later. Yet there's something going on before even it happens in the day of Pesach and Tetzvav Nisan. Something is going on in the world, not only when it actually happened, but before it happened, and today as well. It's not only commemorating events that took place in past tense, there's something going to happen in the next few weeks in our lives that if you take it, you take it seriously, as we joke about all the time, it has a chance to be a life-altering experience. The question is, how do you find the lesson behind each holiday? So there's usually two ways to do so. One way is to look at the stories that are brought down in the Gemara about the holidays, about what happened in those days, and also Minhagim and the halachas that we have surrounding the holidays as well. So I want to go through what I can with you, just for a few moments. A very unique story, and I'm going to try to use actually something that happened in Brachos, just because we all holding in Brachos, either trying to bet guys from last year, or not guys from this year, hopefully. There's a very unusual story that takes place, at least in my mind, it seems very difficult, that happened in Gemara Daf Gimel and Beis and Brachos Daf Dal and Aleph. There's a discussion in the Gemara whether David HaMelech or Moshe Rabbeinu knew when midnight was, when Chatzos was. The Gemara assumes they didn't know. Moshe didn't know why, because it says, Chatzos, at about midnight. If you knew, it was just at midnight. And David didn't know why, because he had a harp that had to wake him up in the morning, at night, midnight, to daven. So it must be neither one really knew when it was. The Gemara says, not true. I shouldn't say to wake him up, I shouldn't say that, I just gave it away. It reminded him when midnight was. The Gemara says, not true. In reality, both David HaMelech knew and Moshe Rabbeinu knew when midnight was. Why David HaMelech have to have the harp place, we just mentioned? Because what if he was sleeping? If he was up, of course he knew what midnight would have been, but maybe he would doze off. After all, it was late at night. It was midnight, he would have dozed off, and maybe he need to be woken up. But Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, also knew when midnight was. The Gemara gives two answers to say why he said kachatzot. I'll focus on the first one. It's a very troubling answer to me. What does Mar say? Why kachatzot? Excellent. Nachas. Because Paro probably had astrologers. They kept their own, sundials, and whatever way they had, maybe hourglasses of sand, and they kept track of time. And what would happen if Moshe says, Bachatzot will come out? But according to their sand, their hourglasses, and whatever dials they had at nighttime, he was 5 seconds late. Chatzot will be the big, not go out of the tribe, but there'll be Makos Bechoros would happen. And if they had in their sand, in their timekeeping ways, a minute different from Moshe Rabbeinu from the real time, they would say something to Gemara. They'd say, Moshe, you fool. You were wrong. Now picture the scene. Their firstborn children either just died a minute ago or die a minute later. And they're sitting there, Moshe Rabbeinu, saying, aha, you were wrong. Question number one. Question number two. At this point in time, they've watched Kadosh Baruch Hu perform 9 makos. Even the astrologers themselves have said, Etzfa Elokimu. This is the hand of God. Would they have the audacity to now say, despite all that, we're pretty good with our time? We're pretty sure you're wrong, God, Moshe Rabbeinu, not us. That sounds absurd. It's just a thing. And let's say there would be a few fools who really would stand their ground and dig their heels in, and they would really say, you know what, you're wrong, and even though our firstborn children just died, we're not makabel. You're off in your time, so it's what we'll call a tie, 1-to-1. Our firstborn died, but you were wrong with your time. What does that even mean? Moshe Rabbeinu, was he generally nervous for things like this make sure there weren't any time-lapse mistakes that happened? Because if he was, I think of a much better time period he should have hedged and said, oh, about, something's going to happen. What would have been a better time? What's that? Okay, good. Yeah, when they came from Har Sinai, Moshe, I'll be back in 40 days. You know what? Why don't you say I'll be back in about 40 days? Hedge a little bit. If he hedged in that one, no chede egel, we'd be much happier people afterwards. But instead, he said, in 40 days. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't generally hedge. So why all of a sudden right now, when it comes to the story of Mitzrayim, is he saying kachatzot? For a few fools? When I grew up in Maryland, so we had something they called time. You can call time. The number was 301-844-4444. And you call, and a woman's voice, an automated voice says, at the tone, the time will be, 8:31. And 20 seconds, and you have a beep, and you're like, oh, let me check my clock. Imagine how foolish you'd be if you're like, oh, let me make a mental note. The clock is 15 seconds fast, because my watch is a different time than that woman on the phone did. That would be ridiculous, because there's a person behind, whoever's in charge of keeping track of time, does more than I do about it. I'll trust them at the end of the day. Why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu had a hedge and say, at about midnight, for maybe a few people who, despite their firstborn child having just died, would still point a finger at God and say, you were wrong with your time. And if that was the case Moshe Rabbeinu had in general, then why not do it for Matan Torah? Question number one. That's just something to realize. Point number two is Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, not when the Michal Machzoros happens, but also when we have leaving Mitzrayim, says we left Mitzrayim be'etzem hayom hazeh, which means smack in the middle of the day. Rashi there points out in a few places, not only here, but also other places as well, this phrase comes up in by the door of Noach, door of Mabul, comes up by the Moshe Rabbeinu dying. Beth-Mir was there as a time period that the Chazal are stressing, Hashem is stressing. I want every person to witness what's about to happen. No one should miss what's about to happen right now. So we see over here right now, for some reason, there was a need that everyone in Mitzrayim should see Bnei Yisrael is walking out, and that you can't stop them even if you tried. Those are two stories that we see going on. Again, one is the around midnight, and one is that everyone must witness our exodus from Mitzrayim. That's as far as stories go. We'll get back to those in a minute. How about some minhagim or halachas? So, what Chazal's job is, when they're giving minhagim over, is to get us into a mood, into a zone, to focus on whatever is supposed to happen right now, we should be focusing on it properly. So, I want to talk a few interesting, again, to me, in my humble opinion, bizarre minhagim or halachas that we wouldn't have thought. But if we look deeper, you're going to see a theme developing, not only in the stories I told you, but also in the minhagim and halachas that we're going to describe right now. First one is just regarding the time period that we celebrate, not Pesach, but Sukkot. If you think about it for a second, you know, Sukkot represents us living either in actual huts or with another cover, the clouds of glory that God protected us with when we left Mitzrayim. And the Torah, as well as many others, ask the question, why do we celebrate Sukkot half a year later? We should celebrate it. We should have our Seder in our Sukkah. After all, when do we begin to live in a hut or with God protecting us? We left Mitzrayim. So yet, for some reason, we don't do it that way. We celebrate Sukkot as far in the calendar cycle as you can, away from when it actually took place. What's the reason why? So the Torah gives a very practical reason. He says, because this time of year, it started to become spring, you know, the flowers are blooming, the sun's coming out more, we're on the upper, you know, the seasons turn into a more pleasant type of experience, and many people in the world will start to sit out in their gazebos and in their huts and appreciate the weather around us. And if you sat outside in your sukkah during the Pesach Seder, you could see your neighbors, non-Jewish neighbors, doing the same thing outside of their homes, appreciating the change of season. But when we go, I know a family in Maryland's like this, for sure in Maryland and in New York as well, when you go and you sit outside in your sukkahs, on sukkahs time, it gets bitter cold sometimes. It's starting to be the rainy season even. And for that reason, the Torah says, we change as far as you can imagine across the calendar. The holiday is sukkahs where it really belongs, which is during Pesach season. So 6 months later, again, you couldn't get further away than that, to the time of Tishrei, to the season that we call now sukkahs. It's a halacha we have. The Taz points out there's a very unique Shabbos that precedes the Shabbos of Pesach. It's called Shabbos HaGadol. What are we celebrating? Anyone know what Shabbos HaGadol is celebrating? Shabbos for Pesach. But something happened. John?
We took the lambs for the Korban Pesach.
Excellent. On the 10th of Nisan, we took the Egyptian gods as we were commanded to by our God. And we took them to our home to inspect, to make sure that they were in fact kosher to be offered as korbanos, and when everyone saw what we were doing, they began to question us, what are you doing with our God? And we responded, oh, we're going to slaughter to our God. And nothing happened. It was a tremendous miracle that we took the sheep of the Mitzrim and we brought them to our homes to slaughter to our God. And that happened the 10th of Nisan, and we celebrate that. By the 10th of Nisan also was on Shabbos. So we celebrated Shabbos HaGadol. Now, the Taz asks a question, but I don't understand. Since when do we celebrate days of the week? We always celebrate the days of the month. Why don't we make it the 10th of Nisan HaGadol? Yom HaGadol, we'll call it. Why Shabbos HaGadol? Says the Taz, something else in history happened the 10th of Nisan. And that was? What's that?
Welcome to Abraham.
Not that I know of.
On the spot here.
That's true, I'm sorry. I didn't say your name. It's not a lie. No one knows it's you, Jonathan. That's your last name.
Shut up.
That same day in the calendar year, not that year, but in the calendar, a number of years later, 40 years later, Yeshua will take Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, and the Yarden will split. The Yardin will do a Kriyas Yamsuf like split, not exactly the same. Mepharshim explained a little different type of split, but a splitting of a sea to let us go into Eretz Yisrael. Now, if you're celebrating the 10th of Nisan, and two things happened in history. One is that you took the lamb home, and no one jumped on you for it, or a sea split. Which one would you celebrate? You'd imagine, obviously, that the lamb going home takes a back seat. So the fact that a sea, that the Yardin split, so we have to enter Eretz Yisrael. And no one would understand that we're celebrating an important event that happened in Mitzrayim. So we break the rule that we do all holiday season long of celebrating days of months. And since only this one happened on Shabbos, we celebrate Shabbos. Shabbos HaGadol, says the Taz. Because we don't want anyone to think that we're celebrating a day that the Yardin split. We don't even have anything about that day. We don't celebrate a day at all. And if we had a 10th of Nisan day, you'd think it was talking about the Yardin splitting. So we put that on the side, we celebrate Shabbos, because only the lamb story happened on Shabbos. And we want to make sure that everyone knows what we're doing. The Rambam points out in Hilchos Chametz Matzah that there's an Isser, and it's going to the Gemara as well, there's an Isser in eating Chametz on Erev Pesach. The Gemara has a very unusual in description of what it's like if you do that. I'm not going to do it right now. But the reason, according to the Rambam, is that when you eat it that night, when you eat Matzah, the night of Pesach, L'shei mitzvah, you should understand that you couldn't eat before it because you have to realize you're about to eat it now, L'shei mitzvah. You shouldn't be confused for eating matzah as a reshus to matzah as a chovah. No one should mistake in the two. We make a din. We prohibit eating matzah early so that you realize when you eat it that night that this is the shame mitzvah's matzah. There's one more point I'll raise and I'll try to tie it all together if I can. There's a general principle that we have, normally just actually in the brachas, my shir the other day, Lama Gimel Abayis, that says that normally you have a certain script, stick to the script. The Gemara brings down a story of a young Talmud who was davening, and he said, Hakel Gadol Gibor V'Anora, and he went on to another six praises of God. And he was accosted. I forget who pulled him aside, or Nichanin, I forget who it was who pulled him aside, and said, you know, are you finished praising God? You're done? You've exhausted all the praises of God? He's an infinite being. How could you ever go break scripts? How could you pass the script? Whatever, says the Gemara there, whatever Moshe Rabbeinu calls God, and that's just what the Ben Great Assembly establishes our Nusach Tefillah, that and only that do we say. We don't want to go beyond it, because if I go beyond it, I can never end. Usually the rule is, if you expand beyond the script, then you cause problems for yourself. But over here, when it comes to Pesach, it's called Amar Ba'arei Zemeshubach. Break the script. Say more. Talk more. Why? It's against the nusach of a tefillah, against the nusach of a bracha. We have a nusach called the Haggadah. Shouldn't we have to stick to the exact text? Because the moment you go beyond text, how do you ever stop? The reason why is because the more you talk about it, the more clarity that you get. You think for a moment, take a step back now to everything we talked about. I'll remind you of all the things we talked about. We started with two stories. Story number one was Kachatzot, approximately midnight. No one should mistaken, even a few fools, for a few seconds, should think for a moment that Hashem was wrong. Not in Pesach time, sorry. Not the time for it. Not Yetzias Mitzrayim. Be'etzem Yom Hazeh, every person must witness our exodus. No one can miss this story happening. Not during the story of the holiday of Pesach, the story of Mitzrayim. No one can miss it. We even have a second holiday we invented. A different part of the year, so that you understand when you're sitting in your sukkah what you're trying to do. Do not confuse yourself. It's not Stam HaHut you're sitting in like your neighbors. You're sitting here now because now is a holiday celebrate called Sukkot because what happened, we left Mitzrayim, according to the Torah list. The Taz says we break the rule of days of the month and we holiday celebrate a day of the week. So you don't think that you're celebrating something else. Only this happened on Shabbos and the Yardin was split on a weekday. So celebrate a day of the week, not a day of the month. So no one mistakes what they're doing. The Rambam says, stop eating the day before Pesach, Matzah, so you realize at night that you realize that you're reminding yourself what took place in the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that we ate Matzah then. And Kol Ma'ariv is Meshubach breaks the normal routine of sticking to a script. The entire theme, if you look at the theme altogether, the theme is about clarity. What happened? Don't mistake what happened. Be aware and conscious of what happened. That's the theme of the day of Pesach. This theme is going to be crucial for us if we want to take this holiday season well. it's crucial for us to understand, for some reason, and we'll get to it soon, this is significant to do in this period of our year. And if we do it well, we're going to see unbelievable changes that happen in our lives. I want to bring up a book that I read years ago by Akiva Tatz called Living Inspired, or by Akiva Tatz. And in it, he asked two very serious questions, great questions about Pesach holiday and the events that took place, as well as Armin Hagen we have today. He asked more than two, I'll highlight two of them. I will not give his answer, I'll give my own answer, because I think it makes sense with what the shot I'm trying to give you over here right now. But he asked the following great kasha. No one here know why were we in a rush to get out of Mitzrayim? Why did we leave so fast that our matzah, our bread couldn't rise, we had matzah instead? Anyone know why? Beautiful. Beautiful idea that the first chance we can get out, let's get out right now. Okay, it's nice. But couldn't we let our bread rise first? Like, let me at least have like a bagel on the way out. I don't want a cracker.
I think also, Gemara Brachos also gives a lesson for that. If you give a person's in jail, basically a sermon, you said, I'll give you a lot of gold, and you get to leave tomorrow, or you can leave right now, the person in the jail would...
But in the end, Hashem came there anyways to get the money anyways. Moshe asked, but in the end Hashem turned down. Hashem said, no, get the money, because I made a promise. Right? So once again, why do we late? Why do we have to rush out so fast?
Chose a Muna that everyone could go out with just matzos.
Well, we didn't know until Hashem kicked us out. We had Muna. Hashem like kind of, we kind of rushed out. It wasn't a decision that we knew in advance. We were thrown out there.
The midbar.
That's lived in the desert. That's something to leave. That's living the 40 years there. But I'm talking about the walkout. The original walkout is I'm not looking for my answer. There is actually a shot brought down. That suggests that there are how many levels of tumma exists? 50. We are at number 49 right now. If we waited another moment in time, there was a chance that we would never get out. It would be the point of no return. Game over. For that reason, we leave now. We left before the matzah was ready. Before it was ready to be bread. We came matzah in the end. We had to run. So it says that Rebbe keeps asking the following question. This makes no sense at all. Picture the following scene. I'll paint the background. We're level tumma number 40. Okay? 40 level tumma a year before we left. Comes along plague called... It's master that right now we're at 49. It's master. Right now we hit 49. Within a moment it could have been 50. It would be too late to leave. A year ago we were at number 40. We have the experience of the first maka called dam. You'd expect if you were the tumma ometer to be now... Whoa. See what God just did? It's unbelievable. We're now at 39 instead of 40. We're going better away from being more tummy. But something's wrong with our machine. We hit 41, then we have Tzvardeya, and then we hit 42? Someone's got to fix our tumma machine. For some reason, we seem to be getting deeper in tumma the more that we experience God. Akiva Tatz said that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. That's Akasha. Big kasha. The second question he asks is, why do we call what we do at nighttime the Seder? Seder means order. Okay, it's true, we know the song, right? Kadesh, Urchatz. Don't sing with me. I'm not going to sing anymore either. But there's an order to our evening. Pasha Pshat, it's called the Seder because there's an order to the evening. But Seder Mekim Tats, we're celebrating E-Seder, which means lack of Seder. You read through the Haggadah, miracle upon miracle happens. Things that shouldn't be are happening now. How many miracles happened? Yom Shiv is Machlokas among the Tanaim. How many unbelievable miracles took place even? It's everything that's illogical. It's not orderly. It's disorderly. So why do we call it a Seder? So he gives a shot, but I'll give you my own shot if I can to answer this question. What's considered Tumma? What's considered Tara? What's Tumma? I want to suggest to you, Tumma is the absence of God in your life, and Torah is the vision of God in your life. Seeing God through everything that you do. Moshe Rabbeinu promised us we're going to leave Mitzrayim. And we're sitting there, we're waiting for it to happen. All of a sudden, the plagues start to happen. And we have a dam. Unbelievable, we see God performing wonders and miracles. And we wake up a month later, and we say, what's God going to do for us today? What's the next... firework. It's going to happen in Mitzrayim today. And we're waiting for it to happen, but we just missed the fact that God woke you up in the morning, that you can see with your eyes, you can move with your body. We missed it. We didn't see it. We're waiting for the next. Where's God going to come up now? How's he going to top that one? Which means that we don't see God until he tops that one. The more you see God with a miracle followed by a miracle, the more you wait for him to quote-unquote appear by one-upping himself with a capital H. Which means you don't see everything else that God's doing for you on a regular basis. Tumah is based upon not noticing God. It required, to see God next required a choshech, a three-day blackness that was so thick. Oh, now I see God. What do you mean now you see God? Can you hear? So that's also God. Can you eat and digest? That's also God. You only see God when he one-ups himself in the day beforehand. You're getting less focused on God in the main world and waiting for him to pull out some rabbit out of a hat again. Which means we're getting more deep in Tumah and more deep in Tumah. The crime we committed in Mitzrayim that get us so deep in Tumah was that we stopped seeing God in the most basic of ways. And we had to find some unbelievable hoo-ha moment to find God in our lives. We do every year, from this point forward, from that point forward, every year we do what's called a Seder. We try to find God in the order of the world. It's called a Seder because now is not the time anymore to be focusing only on the events that take place that were so special in Mitzrayim. Though we do talk about those things, obviously, it's a mitzvah. Tell your children. Because we're trying to do tshuva from our ancestors who themselves were seeing only the moments, the big moments, and forgot to see the little things in life also. The way that a person reaches the greatest heights, there's no Pesach. The word Pesach means to jump and to skip. The Grub points out in Eved Shleima that the Mishkan is built corresponding to man's normal behaviors and normal attributes. And there's a ramp. Because when we grow piece by piece, step by step. It's got to be a very calculated, careful process. Except for Pesach. So it says in Pesach, you have the ability to jump. Pesach means you jump from house to house. The chance to jump exists on Pesach. Life-changing jumps. Not little fingernail changes, but opportunities to become a completely different person if that's what you want. But you have to ironically start from the most basic things. Don't look at the sound and light shows that existed. That's what we did back then. That was a mistake that we made. Look at the most basic level of God in our lives. The Rambam brings down Hilchos Sodei Torah. You know how do you find love of God and fear in God? Just look outside the window. There's a tree. Look how it grows. Understand a fruit on a tree, how it works, how it flowers, how everything happens. That's how you find God in the world. That's how you're in awe of God in the world. I don't need him to open up a sea or split the skies and come down. He created the most fabulous thing. Learn biology. Understand how your body works. Don't wait for your body to break down to appreciate what it does for you every single day. Don't wait for that to happen. If you can understand how God works, beseder in the major normal order of things, that's how you get to a state of jumping leaps and bounds in our life. We don't need to wait to find God. He's right outside. He's right inside. Watch, ready? Eyes closed. I can see. Hold my glass on. I can see. Which means that God just did a wondrous nace for me. Why am I waiting? You know, maybe there's no God in the world. I don't know. You know, prove it to me. Prove it to you. Take a bite of food, chew it and swallow it. And then go to the bathroom X amount of time later, assuming that you can. I don't want to mention anyone who's having trouble right now. And then you'll know there's a God in the world. There's a God in the world. You'll know. I know. I'm aware of it. The problem with us is that we're very busy living our lives waiting for God to come and introduce himself to us. When you meet him every single morning, I'm so thankful for you giving me life. You gave me everything. That's what we should be thinking about every morning instead of waiting for the sea to split. Your sea split every day when your heart beats. That's your sea splitting. I'll tell you what, just a quick story and then I'll end with this. It happened 18 years ago, in the basement that we're in downstairs. I was in the Chris Cole at the time. I'm not worthy of that. I don't need that, but I appreciate it. And I happen just a little back on myself. You know, everyone has their own challenges. I have many challenges. One of my challenges I have is that I don't do well with people who aren't well themselves. People who are sick. I go to a hospital. I get very queasy. I get nauseous. I don't do well with people like that. That's my. I really want to work on it very badly. When I was, you know, in Israel for the year, those people were looking to ask. I knew I couldn't do it. I wouldn't be able to do that. It was a weakness that I had. When I was in Gris, though, I was married. There was a person who came to the Kollel, to the Gris Kollel. He was a 40-year-old man. His name was Yossi Altine, and he was afflicted with Lou Gehrig's disease. He had ALS. And the time when I met him, so he only had use of his eyes. Nothing else. He couldn't move his body. He couldn't do anything but move his eyes. And he wanted to come to the base to the yeshiva, the Kollel, and he wanted to learn in the Kollel with a chavrusa. So I go to my, actually, Rabbi Goldschmidt's brother, was my chavrusa at the time, and I said to him, maybe we can, maybe we can learn with us. We should volunteer our services with him, learn together. And we got to have a tryout. Different people were open to it. We had people, he tried different chavrusas out. And he picked our chavrusa. So from that point in time, he was a third person in our chavrusa. He couldn't speak, but he could understand. He could listen. He was a bright person. And the way he communicated was he had a board that had on it four rows of letters. And if something was bothering him, and I learned how to, you know, he could see his face would grimace. So he was bothering him, so you could kind of turn to him and say, is everything okay, Yossi? And if not, take the board out and we kind of play like Wheel of Fortune. And the first time we learned together, so everything was smooth, no problems at all. Fine. Second day, we're learning together, and he gets a grimace on his face. So I said, Daron, like, you know, Daron, get the board. Like, play the game. Take the board out. And I said, Yossi, is everything okay? He goes, looks away, which means no. Something bothering you, Yossi? He looks to me, which means yes. Okay. I said, let me have the board. You know, I said, is it in the first row of letters? The first letter or the first word? In the first row of letters. Looks away, which means no. Second row of letters, looks away. Third row of letters, looks right at me. Yossi, the first letter or the first word is in the third row of letters? Looks right at me. Okay. Is it a T? Looks away. Is it a P? He looks at me. Yossi, first letter, first word, P? Looks at me. The wrong P. Remember that. I'm not going to go on and exaggerate because we're short of time. He spelled the word please. He said, please close the blinds. Could you imagine? It takes 3 minutes, probably, to say a word. And he has the decency to say, please. How many of us spend our days, it will take you a half of a second to say a kind word to someone. You don't say the word please or thank you. I came home from that event. I told my wife, I said, I can't. I'll tell you why I'm emotional in a minute, but I can't. Imagine what you don't know. What I saw the biggest Muslim safer in the world is now. It's a guy who can't speak and sign please. I was like so affected by this, and I realized that Yossi to me was this vort. It was a person who would do anything he could to be in any of your bodies. Give him a day in your body, he would wish for it. He wouldn't snooze his alarm clock. He wouldn't sit and waste his time watching movies or television shows. Maybe we're in the basement. Maybe he'd just run around. Maybe just walk. But I can promise you he wouldn't spend a day like you do. Because you're so lucky. You're so lucky to live in a world when you have so much ability. And you can function. And yet, you don't do it. You'd rather sleep away your time. Drink away. Other things away, your time, than to live in a world when you get to see God every second of your lives. And now you're trying to grapple, what should I do next with my life? You're right now here, we have the chance to do everything right. Just be here. Just function. Pesach is about understanding not the great miracles that took place for us. Is that you can look at your family in the eye and say, can you please pass the salt? You can talk to someone and see someone in need and say, how can I help you? I lived with Yossi for a year and a little bit. I got a phone call my second year learning with him, Pesach time. I was in America, he passed away. You can't imagine a better time for a person like that to leave the world when it's all about basic opportunities that we have to see God in the world. I'm with you, the last point I'll end with you. I start off the story of my boys. And I kind of made it a joke at their expense to you, like they missed it. Like, what? There's an elephant there. Like, what are you looking at a bird for? But the truth is, they're right, I'm wrong. It's not a big, the elephant and a bird are the same. Every one of them is the creation of God. If you're in a zoo and you only see an elephant and you don't see an ant, you don't appreciate a bird, you don't look in the mirror and appreciate you, then you missed it. And that's why I missed it that day in the zoo. I missed it. My kids got it. I didn't get it in the end. We live in a world when there's so many distractions around us. We live in a world of madness. It's also March now, but we live in a world of extreme madness. And it's just distraction after distraction after distraction. The goal of the world right now is just to keep you one thing to the next thing. Just stop. Stop the madness. You are the luckiest, each of you is the luckiest person in the world. What you have, people would die for. Your ancestors would have died to be in yeshiva in Israel. And some of them actually probably did. To sit in a yeshiva and learn. Stop with all the big this and large that. And great plans for the future. And if I spend the next time, I better rush to this so I can finish that and get... Just stop and smell the flowers. You're living right now in a dream. Don't make it a nightmare. You're in a dream. I'll give you a bracha. For myself and for you. And Pesach is a time for us to appreciate life. Daily, basic things in life. Not to fall prey to the mistakes that our ancestors made of waiting for God to appear. Don't wait. He already appeared to us. He appears to us every single day. We should merit to see him in our lives, to be able to take that lesson with us, to make a jump, not little baby moves, but jumps of a spiritual connection to ourselves, to our family, and to Al Klal Yisrael.